Welcome to this online interview by Project Cargo Weekly. Our very special guest of honor today is Mr. Peter Dudas. He's the Vice President and Head of Industrial Projects, Middle East and Africa, based in Dubai in the Middle East. First and foremost, Peter, very welcome to this interview.
Thank you, Bill. Nice to be here. Thank you.
Likewise, likewise. I always allow my interviewees, Peter, to elaborate for our viewers a little bit about their career. It doesn't have to be a long statement, but it can just be interesting for viewers to know, how did you end up in shipping? How come you're not in banking or accounting, or why are you in shipping?
Yeah, I ask that question to myself every once in a while. But joking aside, I have now been a citizen of the world for about 20 years. I originally come from Hungary, Eastern Europe. Left uni after about 6 months because it just wasn't for me. And started working for a trading company in foreign trade, imports and exports. And that was where I came across the wonder of the shipping containers that were, they were being delivered to our warehouse from China, full of all the goodies. And then also I was in charge of coordinating customs clearances for the exports to the neighboring countries. And I felt this was pulling me, this whole topic of shipping and logistics and moving things around the world. So I looked up a course, a 2-year kind of vocational course, that was in the topic of shipping, freight forwarding and logistics, I think would be the right term. And did that while I was working, after which I specifically started looking for freight forwarding jobs. And after a short search, I ended up working for Panalpina, the company that no longer exists.
Right.
And I was quite young, and I had to relocate from my hometown to the capital, Budapest. Somehow I never found my place. I always felt this itch to move. And one day I just walked up to my then country manager, who was an Austrian gentleman, and said, if there was an opportunity, I know the company's big, 150 countries. If there was an opportunity to go abroad and try myself, I would love that. And he responded almost instantly, pointing his finger at me and saying, "Nigeria."
Wow.
I'll admit I didn't know much about Nigeria at the time. I was, I think, 22 or 23.
Wow.
But I learned those days that Panalpina had a very big operational footprint in Nigeria. This is the mid-2000s.
Yeah.
And was invited to the head office in Switzerland for an interview. It was the first time I flew, commercially. And then it was a very interesting experience to see another country, a whole different world. I think it's quite a stark cultural and economic difference between, Eastern Europe and Switzerland, of all places.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
And they offered me a position in what was the regional back office for the West Africa operations to be trained up and then be transferred to Africa when there was an opening.
Okay.
I lived 2 years in Basel, Switzerland, where my mindset was always that I'm in transit. I'm going to go to Africa. And 2 years later, there was an opening in Ghana, which suited me because it was a bit more relaxed than some of the West African countries, but also an English-speaking country, which was the only other language that I spoke other than my native and some little German. But all the Francophile countries and the Portuguese-speaking countries were just not really an option for me.
Right.
And there was a time when they had just found commercial oil in Ghana, and hence the role the company wanted to see if they can expand the business in that segment. And so I learned a lot over there about logistics supporting the offshore oil and gas industry, which I think is a little different than the field that I'm mostly active in today.
Yeah.
And see, of all places, it is Ghana that I met my wife, who was also an expat there at the time.
Okay.
And her company actually within a year, I think, told her that we need you to move to Papua New Guinea because there's a this big LNG project there, and her company had a big contract. And after a lot of back and forthing, we had decided that we would move, and I was looking for another job. And if you consider the globe, I mean, Ghana and Papua New Guinea are almost opposite sides of the globe. So
Definitely,
that
yeah.
was quite the journey. But I ended up with Doigro
Ah,
working
yeah.
in Papua New Guinea, who at the time were just preparing for the PNG LNG contract that they had with one of the EPC contractors on that project.
Yeah.
And I mean, again, a very steep learning curve there for me over the 2 year period that I spent in Papua New Guinea, because we were doing everything ourselves. We built, I mean, we had constructed a heavy lift yard airside. We loaded and offloaded 88 AN-124 Antonov flights. I had to become a certified rigger,
Yeah, wow.
right? I was supervising vessel discharges in the port, being the lead pilot for the oversized convoys that we did with own transport equipment as well in Papua New Guinea, which is a wonderful place in many ways, but security is not one of its
No.
main advantages. So learned a lot about the industry well before the age of 30, and then the project was starting to wrap up. And I remember I got a call one day from a gentleman who's also today a big name in the shipping industry, I think, Dominic Stähler,
Ah, yes.
who introduced himself, calling, of course, from Houston at the time, and said, "We've got this big mining opportunity with one of our preferred customers in Ghana." And he'd been told about my history in Ghana, so basically I had 7 days to sort my affairs, so to say, leave my wife temporarily behind, get on a plane, move to the
Temporary.
UK.
Yeah.
Yeah, move to the UK, get a visa, and get on a plane and go to Ghana, and meet with potential subcontractors and agents, and gather all the information that we needed for the RFQ. Went to South Africa thereafter, where I had my first experience with writing a proposal with Dominic, and that was quite a defining moment, as it later turned out. For after that opportunity, I discovered that I had quite a unique knack for writing, synthesizing information and presenting it in a way that is fit for the purpose. And so after a couple of years doing business development and sort of ancillary things, working with some of the bigger names in Doigro in the UK, I found myself in tender management,
Yeah.
and did that for a good, I think, about 5 years.
Interesting. And then what led you then ultimately to DHL after this big career?
It was a very interesting time. This was COVID.
Yeah, are
Uh,
you?
and, yeah, 2020, 2021, I had moved out of London
Yeah.
to the countryside. So I was in a very lucky position, because even during the lockdowns that we had in the UK, I lived on the edge of a forest. So I was relatively free and able to go have me time in the forest and a lot of reflection. And I learned a lot about myself.
Yeah.
And I just had an approach from DHL at the right time,
Oh, yeah.
for an opportunity that I at the time described as my dream job, really. And one thing followed the other, and we had a contract signed. I had resigned from my then employer, and I'm now almost at my fifth anniversary at DHL, and never been happier.
So when so let me just get this clear. So when you started with DHL, was that in the Middle East where you are located now?
We're still in the UK.
Oh, that was UK. Okay, right, got it.
It was still in the UK, 21, July time, I think it was,
Fire.
when I started. I was in a corporate position, looking after commercial strategy and the RFQ management.
Right.
Worked with some really fantastic guys from the organization, many of them still with the company. Some have left, as it happens very often in this industry. After about 2 years, a lot of work and personal factors just met at one specific point in time when the opportunity to relocate here arose, and we took that. And it has been quite, in hindsight, quite a positive decision, because professionally, being here closer to the action, and I'm sure that many other of your interviewees or other conversation partners will tell you that the Middle East project market is crazy hot at the moment. So, I
It seems to me that that you're in the right place at the right time, and with your background and experience, I'm quite sure that DHL is lucky to have you there. Getting back to the organization of DHL in the Middle East, what can you tell our viewers briefly about where are you with your own offices? What's your headcount? Where are you in which countries in the Middle East and Africa? Percent two right now.
Correct. So yeah, I mean that in my current role, I'm not just looking out to the Middle East, but also Africa. So back to what used to be my roots almost 20 years ago, which is actually very nice. So DHL Industrial Project is a solution or a product within DHL Global Forwarding. So we're not a separate company. We have all the benefits that come with being part of one of the top three or the top four global freight forwarding companies, depending on what statistic one is looking at. Within Industrial Projects, we have about 300 people in across the region, and we currently have 17 or 18 countries that we operate in as DHL Industrial Projects.
That's pretty cool. It's quite a
Keeps me busy, Bo.
sizable
It
unit.
keeps me busy.
Yeah, I mean, not only securing the projects, but also admin and getting people to work together. That's probably the biggest project of them all, I could imagine.
Yeah, it's an incredibly diverse region, from many different perspectives, right? You've got the cultures, where sub-Saharan African sort of tribal culture seeping into the workplace meet with the Middle Eastern cultures. Of course, this today we're in the middle of Ramadan as we talk. It has its own challenges that are very difficult for people outside of this region, not having experienced how Ramadan is, to explain how it impacts our business and the work of the people that we work with. But also, I mean, languages, right? Freight forwarding is a network business. Any shipment starts in one place and almost always ends in another. And so our challenge in this business is to make that connection as seamless as possible. And like I said, the small but very, very important factor of speaking the same language, having the same culture in the organization, almost being able to expect what the other person on the phone or in the email is saying, is a critical success factor.
Now that's very true, and I think I mean DHL overall, as far as I can see from around the world, has a fantastic name. I mean, I remember when DHL kind of got started into industrial projects, we all thought that DHL, now you're very good at doing courier and delivering packages, but not many thought about DHL as industrial projects. But you have certainly made your mark around the world now. How is your how would you rate the success you've had in the Middle East? Of course, you face competition like everybody. How do you feel that your footprint is doing right now?
We're on a journey, and I'm not sure if there's a one-size-fits-all answer to that question, Bo. We have markets that are more competitive than others, that have lower barriers of entry for smaller competitors to try to set foot. We have countries where or markets in the region that are really difficult to get into, and one really needs the scale and the financial strength to be able to effectively sustain a business, really. And I think this is only going to increase this trend, because we're at a very interesting time where we see new markets in the oil and gas industry in particular opening up, after some of the terrible times that the people of these countries experienced. And I'm just thinking of Syria and Libya, for example, most recently. But Iraq is a very, very important market for us in the ITER industrial projects. We've been there for a long period of time, and we're extremely busy there. But simply the demand currently, the growing number of operators and companies wanting to compete in these markets for the business of these, let's say, oil and gas operators, creates a demand that is very difficult, thankfully, to satisfy, right? Good, strong demand in the market is very important. It attracts new players to the market. It creates competition. It's good for the end users, good for the customers. It is what keeps us on our toes. It is what is keeping us, what is pushing us really to continue improving. But I think it's, we also, and I wouldn't say we have our niche, but we know what we're strong at. We know the domains in which we can effectively compete. And we, I think, also are quite self-reflective and aware of where we're not going to be able to effectively compete. So our success really in the marketplace relies on being able to make a quick and accurate judgment on where we can effectively win and grow the business.
No, it's and finding the right people. I mean, as I said, DHL has certainly a good name around the world, so hopefully, including yourself, good people can be attracted. One question that comes to mind, you need to find ships to carry your cargo around the market. And recently, we've seen a couple of ship owners in particular. Maybe it's not something new, but it's certainly been increased recently. They want to be forwarders, effectively cutting out the middleman, so to speak. How do you view that as a global and giant project freight forwarding division of DHL? Will these shipping lines that compete with you, can you say directly, will they be successful in competing with the forwarders? How do you view that?
I think only time will tell. There are certain markets where the market structure is changing, and that influences how who our customers are as an industry and how they procure services. But in general, I think to be able to survive in this business, you need scale, right? You need a certain size of network, a certain financial strength. Which, I think in the current environment is a good time for ship owners to try to diversify their business. But personally, I think this vertical integration model has its limitations, and there are success stories in the market. But there's also, I think, several examples of failures where the best intentions were used by the best people to start a new leg for a company to stand on, but they may not have been doing the right things, or potentially wasn't the right time. At the end of the day, at the end of the day, when the times are good, everyone is wanting to go towards the business and enter new markets and stretch their expenditure. When times get tough, that's when I think the saying we would say in England is the wheat gets sorted from the chaff, right? That's where I think when the music stops and we're short a couple of chairs, some people will not be able to sit down.
Yeah, no, that's very well said, actually. Another question, the chartering of vessel, let's say you have a heavy lift project, do you have a central chartering desk in DHL that you are part of, or do you do your own chartering, booking, let's say, in the Middle East?
Yes, I wouldn't call it a desk anymore because we actually have a chartering division headed by
Division,
Torben Martens.
Torben.
I think the team is now approximately 20 people strong and growing, supported by strong digitalization initiatives, our strengthening name in the market, our ability to tap new customers or new customer segments that we have not been able to tap in the past. And Torben has grown this department from just himself 5 or 6 years ago. So incredible growth that we've witnessed. Of course, We're not a broker, and we're a freight forwarder who charters ships to deliver the services and the goods that we need to, which means that the chartering division is not an island in the business. Sure, there are occasions when they do things, they behave entrepreneurially and find opportunities that otherwise, as a freight forwarding organization, we may not be able to. But in the grand scheme of things, their success is the success of the HL Industrial Projects and the freight forwarding network that we are. The footprint of these 20 people, they scattered on five continents now, right? So we always try to be the closest to the carriers, closest to the ship owners, reduce the distances, reduce the noise in the communication, to be able to get the best rates and be able to secure the business in this very competitive marketplace.
Now that's that sounds it sounds like you have certainly that in hand, and with, as I said, with your size, you can do door to door, and you have a good name. Yeah, you certainly have big chances for the big projects, to be up there with the Joneses, as the movie says. How do you still go out to visit customers personally, or has that changed in any way after Corona? Like, we are having our interview online here. Are customers still willing to see you in the field, and that you can have meetings with them?
100%.
Okay, well,
100%.
that's good to hear.
Yeah, I think the biggest benefactors of the rebound from COVID have been the airlines, not just because of the tourism, but also that nothing beats, particularly in our business,
Face
which
to
is
face.
not a highly commoditized business in every aspect. Some aspects it is. The relationships and the face-to-face opportunities for a conversation, for a coffee, for a handshake, for a beverage. Those are still, I think, the defining moments. Not the only way that business is made. Those days are gone. They were before my time, unfortunately. But I think in order to be successful in this industry, one needs to be out there. So I was sitting with customers in Abu Dhabi two weeks ago, and we've had some really stunning feedback on the performance of the business and the services that we deliver. And I'm incredibly proud of the teams who enabled and delivered that. But also we've been given, and I mean those words, we have been gifted some feedback that will allow us to actually improve our services and get better as time goes on. And if you don't mind, I wanted to step back to one of the previous points that you mentioned, which is, I think as an industry, we do have a challenge in attracting new talent.
Correct.
It's I think in I've got a 22-year-old son, and I see the difference at home. And I was when I got the opportunity to jump on a plane and move to another continent, I was keen. I wanted to explore. And the current youth, I think, is not universally true that they would be the same. They live life at a different pace. They have different sets of values. And I think it, generally speaking, project forwarding is not an easy sell. It's not what I would call a sexy profession. It is for most of us, right? I love this industry. I wouldn't leave it I mean, I think I might one day potentially become a stand-up comedian, but joking aside, it's an industry that every day brings something new, right? Every day I'm learning something new. I get challenged. I'm lucky because I work with people underneath me in the organization, but also my managers and my superiors. And they always bring something new to the table. I'm now past the 4X, and still every day I'm learning. So
None
why
of
I
it.
wanted to say that is because it is part of DHL's strategy to be the employer of choice. So we spend a lot of effort, in fact, a lot of money on making sure that as an employer, we get things right. We want people to come and work for us, right? And we're also investing in the newer generations. Last year, we ran a program called Next Gen IP, where we had eight fresh intake for this graduate program. I'm not going to say they were fresh graduates. Some were fresh graduates. Some were from an armed forces background, which I think is a very good hiring ground for industrial projects as a sector. But also some people have just had different experiences in the professional world and wanted to try something new. And in December we were in Houston and they had their graduation ceremony. And it was so good to see that these guys who went through a program where they went to four or five locations around the world, they came to Dubai, all of them, did different to work parts of different departments, different workflows in the company. They got to learn a whole lot about project forwarding, about chartering, about even the IT aspect of things, which is a big important factor of DHL success. And they stayed with us. And they took full-time jobs, and some of them are actually part of the chartering team now. So super exciting.
Well, that certainly serves to your credit. I mean, I've had other interviewees who also alluded to the same thing, how to get our youngsters to be interested and not go to Google or Facebook or some other online platform. So I'm very happy to hear this because as we get older, who's going to replace us? And yeah, this is the, I fully agree with you. This is the best business there is. So that's why we're still hanging on and we can't retire, as
Right.
it
But
were.
I'm sure I can speak for both of us. We do want to retire at once,
Yeah,
right?
well, gradually, not too fast. We still have to have a finger in there, but ultimately, yes. One
Sometime,
of
yeah.
my final questions, Peter, after this, how do you look into your crystal ball for 2026, which we kind of just started? You said the Middle East was hot. Can you elaborate on that? You see a lot of chances for you in your region because you have a very big responsibility there. Do you see 26 as a good year for you?
I do, and it's not to say that there aren't any clouds on the horizon. I mean, we live in a unique time insofar as my memories goes back, or as long as my memory goes back, the volatility, the geopolitical kind of power plays that are happening in the background that are having an impact on the business of our customers, right? With the tariff tussle involving the US and many other countries. This is an impact on our customers in terms of not really knowing what's going to happen. Our industry, we have very long lead times, right? Some projects take 5, 10, 15 years to actually get from paper to the sod being cut and the construction being started. And the rounds of approvals that need to be achieved. And the investment that needs to be secured for these projects and the rounds of tendering and the FEED to the EPC phase, these are, I think, throwing some sand in the machinery. I think some things are slowing down a bit. But at the same time, I think from a Middle East perspective, what we do see is a combination of both the state-owned companies investing very heavily, particularly in GCC states into not just one sector, into a lot of sectors. And we can start and talk about the investments that are going into the oil and gas sector, the traditional kind of projects and EPC industries that I think continues to be our bread and butter, but it's also supplemented by the effects of the diversification of these governments into renewables. So I mean, here in the Middle East, we have 350, 355 sunny days. The cost of producing solar electricity and equally wind electricity, according to a paper that I have read, is the lowest here compared to the rest of the world, right? So the potential here is huge. And in fact, last year we delivered several wind farm projects, several solar projects. This is going to continue. This is going to continue. I don't think, the old energy, so to say, will go away, but we see these new branches, the new energy industries. We see sustainable aviation fuel projects taking place in the region. Of course, being DHL with DHL Aviation having a very, very large fleet of aircrafts, we're interested in that development, not just as a project forwarder, but also as a as a potential buyer of the products, because the sustainability aspect of our business is extremely important to us, and we are amongst the first forwarders who have actually invested into securing sustainable aviation, sustainable marine fuel supplies that we can then resell to our customers to allow them to reduce their carbon footprints.
Interesting. It's really some interesting perspectives there, and it seems to me that you have your work cut out for you for the next decade or so in the Middle East. So you better hang in there. And as I would like to say, it's been amazing to talk to you, Peter. You have a fantastic background, and like we say, traveling is living, as the old Hans Christian Andersen in Denmark used to say, traveling is living, and you've certainly done that. I mean, from Ghana to PNG, that's a long one, I would say. So very interesting to talk to you. I want to say on behalf of myself and my viewers, many thanks to you today.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, Bill.
Certainly, certainly. And to all our listeners, viewers, and readers from around the world, this was yet another great interview by Project Cargo Weekly. Our very special guest of honor today has been Mr. Peter Dudas. He's the head of and vice president of industrial projects for DHL. He's based in Dubai in the Middle East, has a quite impressive background, as you can hear from this interview, and I think you should certainly consider to call DHL next time you have an industrial project, and not only when you have a courier delivery. So they can do it all. So for me and Project Cargo Weekly, thank you very much, and until next time, thank you.